We got the definitive the Mishnah, right? Did we get the final Gemara? Yeah, we did. Okay, we got the Shmuel Amar. No test on base. Shmuel Amar, but Marshall Zuazu. Now, the question is that that's about a bit halfway down the Gemara, two-thirds of the way down the page. So the question was, in the Mishnah it said that if there's 200 bucks there, so the first woman and the three women, one was supposed to get 100, the other was supposed to get 200, the other was supposed to get 300. The first woman gets 50, the second and third each get 75, right, making 200 bucks altogether. So the question is why the first woman should only get 33 and a third, which is her percentage of the first 100, right? She shouldn't get a full 50. Why should she get a full 50? The first 100 is equally should be equally distributed among all of them, so she should get 33 and a third, another 33, the second one 33 and a third, and the third one 33 and a third. And the second 100, which is not magia to the first woman, because she doesn't have any shibud on the second 100, so each of the two other women should get 50 in that. So it should be 33 and a third, and 83 and a third, and 83 and a third. Why is it 50, 75, 75?
Because it's the proportion.
No, it's not proportional. Since she has no claims on the second 100 bucks that are there. That's what the Mishnah is assuming. So it shouldn't be report. It should be only proportional. The way the Gemara is learning is not that until she gets 100 bucks, she has a shibud on the entire estate, but rather each 100 bucks of the estate is judged differently because there isn't enough money to go around. So if in the first 100 bucks she has a third stake, the second 100 bucks she has no stake because her ksuba is only 100 bucks. And it said, but the stake of the woman at a ksuv of 200, woman at a ksuv of 300 are equal in the second to 100 bucks. So if, again, it should be 33 and a third for the first woman, 83 and a third for the second woman, and 83 and a third for the third woman. Yet here it's 50, 75, 75. Why is that? So it says more this way about where the second and third woman were klutzes, basically. Shmuel Mar Marsha Zua Zu, it's the idiot factor. Marsha Zua Zu. They gave each other the power of attorney. She here says Ashlishis as Ashniel Odune Marishina. And here the third one gave the power of attorney to the second one to adjudicate or to negotiate with the first one. So the second one was an idiot. Amrallah, she said to the first woman, Lo Mana Islach, do you not have a stake in $100? Sav Chamishin Vezel, take 50 and go. But she was an idiot. She thought she's making a legitimate compromise, but it was a stupid compromise. She should have done divided up the $100 in three. But since she was representing the other woman, who the third party wasn't here, she either forgot about it or couldn't do math, and therefore she said, you take 50 and I'll take 50, all right, of this 100 bucks, and we'll split up the second 100 bucks among ourselves. She couldn't do math, right? No arithmetic. So, because now here's a very interesting case, actually. I don't remember any of this from the Bavli, and I didn't look it up in the halacha, but it's a very interesting principle the Gemara wants to tell us. Although the Gemara doesn't actually, the truth is the Gemara doesn't really pass in this way, but nevertheless, it's interesting. You have three people who put money into a common fund, no investment fund. Vosiro pichsu. And the fund went up in value or down in value. Kach yuchol was down in value. Kach yuchol can divide it the same way it indicates in our Mishnah. That the first 100 bucks, everybody has a share in. The second 100 bucks, whoever had a share in that. And the third 100 bucks, whoever had a share in that. And so on and so forth. Now, says the one, this is a really interesting part. Amar Rabbi Elazar said, Hadadat Amar b'shoysa asela chasera, that if the money went up in value, or yisera went down in value, or yisera or went up in value. But let's say the fund realized gains, or let's say the fund lost value, not the money, right? But through their investments, they invested in stuff which went sour, or invested in stuff which went up in value. Okay?
And I understand the difference.
Well, in one case, the money becomes more precious. The government, made the coins more precious, right?
It wasn't that their investments were so good, just
right.
The
value of money went up, right? In the other case, their investments are good or bad. Right. And where the money went up or down, so that they divide the either gain or loss proportionally, because each one staked a different amount of money there, right? So one person has more coins in the pot than the other person, right? So that's proportional. However, I was trying to say if they invested and they made money investments, or they lost an investment, kulam chokin b'shaveh. All the gains and all the losses divided up equally, not proportionally. Now the Gemara asks, what are you talking about? The kash, it's difficult. This guy gave $100. And the other guy gave $10. Vat amar achein, and you're going to say they're divided equally?
The risk is not equal.
Right. So nevertheless, no, the Gemara defends his position. Chevraya omrin, the chevra said, yochlu meimar leh, he could say to him, the $10 guy, can say to the $100 guy, ayidei mon yai, because of my $10, salkas pragmatia. You could buy the merchandise. In other words, the merchandise he bought was merchandise that cost $110. Without my $10, you couldn't have bought it. So therefore, my $10 were essential to the gains, and therefore I should share proportionally, not proportionally, but equally in the gains. So it says, Ma'akidun, okay, fine. That makes sense. That was pragmatia zaira. There was a small amount of merchandise they brought. It's like they bought one pearl, right? So the one pearl. So you need the full $110 in order to get that size pearl. Have a pragmatic rule of whether there are many pieces, right? Not just one piece. So the guy who says the hundred guy says, well, 100 of those pieces were bought with my money. And they weren't contingent on your money. Only 10 of those pieces were bought with your money, right? Let's say they're wearing cubic zirconia as opposed to pearls, right?
Or a string of pearls.
Right, a string of pearls, right. So therefore, he says, let's make it proportional. Says Maram Rabbi Avin Bar Chir, Rabbi Chir says, no, there too it's not proportional. Yochu Mei Merlei, the 10 guy can say the 100 guy, Ad at mazbin chad, in the time you bought one, ana mazbin asora zimin, I could have bought 10. The interesting thing, he says, I'm much more fluid. My position is much more fluid because I'm only dealing with $10. So I could have invested it in the amount of time it takes you to buy and sell of your larger investment. I could have bought and sold many times over with my $10 and made much more money with a smaller amount because of my more mobile, more liquid position. Okay? All right, that's what it says here. Adkidun makam karov. Okay, so he says, all right, that may be true if the market is nearby, so we can run every day to the market with $10 and keep making more money. What about the makam rachok? What if the market is very far away? On Rabbi Hila said, Yochum Memele could say, Adat ozil va'ase, chadzman, by the time you went, we're on top of Samacham Rav, 119. Yochum Memele could say, Adat ozil va'ase, chadzman, the time it takes you to go one time, I could have gone 10 times. Why? Because you're going to carry a much heavier load each time. Because you're much more you're much more loaded down, and you have many more pieces of merchandise to sell, much more to transport. I'm much more light on my feet, so to speak, and therefore I can make much more money with my $10 than you can make with your $100. So the bottom line is that he claimed, and according to Rabbi Lutz, we'll give him the benefit of this claim, that he has, that his $10 are equal in value to the $100, and therefore they split up the proceeds and the losses equally 50-50. Okay? It's amazing, Gemara.
Can you remind me a little what, it's not really the same, but like active income and passive income. The original case of just the money going up in value is like passive income.
Right.
That's a good
chiluk. In other words, where it's working, so that sometimes the work, since we're working on it, sometimes the guy who has $10 say, well, I'm a much more diligent worker. The fact is, I held myself back by investing with you, and therefore you have to give me equal gains. It's a nice chiluk. That makes it more palatable. Tamatin, now ask a more question. Tamatin, we learned over there. Chazar v'nogach shor. Echot shav masayin. This is a very interesting halacha. The halacha is, my ox scores your ox. And it's a ton. So then the halacha is that I now own half of your ox. Okay? Assuming that the ox which is gored to death is valueless. So Tom pays chatzi nezek, half of the damage, and it pays migufo, pays from the ox itself. So now if my ox gores your ox, and your ox is worth $200, my ox is worth $200, a simple case, so now you own $100 worth of my ox, right? What happens if now our ox gores another ox? So how much do the two of us own? How much does our ownership share go down to?
A quarter value, right.
50, I own 50, you have 50, and the new guy owns 100, right? What if the ox gores again? So now our value goes down to 25-25. And his value goes down to 50, and the new guy gets 100. Okay?
That's
the third time. That's the last time. Then next time it's in what? Okay? So it says the Gemara, the last guy gets $100. This case I just gave you, the third time it gores, before it becomes a muad, the last guy gets $100. So Shana Fanav, and the guy immediately before him gets fifty bucks. Ushnaim Rishonim Dinar Zog, and the first two guys, they only have $25 left. The Chen L'Schar. Now there it says also that if the ox goes up in value, you know, each one of us realizes a proportional gain in the value of our share of the ox. But that's a kasha, because in our sugya we said things are not proportional. That when things go up, then the gain is distributed not proportionally, but rather is distributed based solely on the amount of people there, no matter how much money each person put in initially. So how come here it's proportional? Why is the difference? Rabbi Rabizira, the truth is that it's l'schar here doesn't mean that the ox went up in value, because that's a bad example, because where the ox went up in value, it's like we said before, that where the gold goes up in value, so then you split the increase proportionally, indeed. But this is talking about a case where we rented out the ox or something like that. So we rented out the ox, so each person who has a share in the ox should get equal proceeds from the rental fee, just like where you have an investment fund, each person should get equal proceeds from the investments, as opposed to dividing it proportionally. That's the Gemara's question. Okay? So says the Gemara, I'll tell you the answer. Says the Gemara, I'm Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Zira, Polygon, Rabbi Les. He says Rabbi Zira, who says that they divide it proportionally. Or is Rabbi Lezer? Rabbi Lezer holds that you divide it up based on the amount of people, not proportionally. And Rabbi Zira argues. Rabbi Yudan proposed another alternative in front of Rabbi Yudan. Lomod Rabbi Lezer, doesn't Rabbi Lezer concede? Shem hitnu beneim. If they made a condition between the two of them that there should be, that if their investment fund has a rise in value, that they should divide up proportionally. That each person gets based on what he put in. In other words, they can make it a proportional distribution. They can override the even distribution, the pole, that's the per capita distribution, and make it proportional. Well, if that's the case, shvarim kimutnim hem. By oxen, it's as if you made this condition. That's an interesting reason why that's true. The Korban Eda explains that an ox, which gored, the partnership was made against their will. You know, when my ox gores your ox, so you don't want to be a partner. It just happens, right? So before we said by an investment, when two people get together to make an investment, so the guy who has the smaller funds can say, yeah, but I'm a better investor. So therefore, I should divide up equally. You know, you're the money, but I'm the brains. And I'm also much more diligent. So therefore, we should divide up equally the proceeds, right? But by an ox, and that's why the assumption is in that case, unless specified otherwise, they divide it up equally. But by an ox, there's really no such thing. By an ox, you know, we're not, each person who comes into the deal can't say, well, my part of the ox is better than your part of the ox, right? Or I would have made more money with the ox than you would have made with the ox, because had the ox not gored your ox, you would never have joined in the deal. So therefore, in this case, we don't have any of these tinus which we had before, and therefore they divided up equally. Okay? Says the Gemara, Vamra Kum Rabbi Yossi. He said it for Rabbi Yossi. He said it for Rabbi Yossi. In fact, they argue explicitly. Rabbi Zira Mastaman Chokim B'Shar. Rabbi Zira says, two people who joined up in an investment, and one gave more money, one gave less money, by default they divided evenly in the proceeds, 50-50. Rabbi Zira Mastaman, by default, Zeno Telkil Figi, so each person takes proportionally based on his investment. One takes proportionally based on his investment. The Zeno Telkil Figi, so the one takes proportionally based on his investment. So therefore, the conclusion of the Gemara is, it sounds like Rabbi Zira, you know, it's proportional no matter what, not per poll, per capita, but proportional. Okay? Halacha. Mishua Nosishna and Arba Nosim. Somebody is married to four wives. Umeis, and then he died. Harishena Kodem is the first wife he married. Raksuva came first. Kodem is the Shnir. She comes before the second wife. Ushnir, the second wife. Ushlisha is the third wife. Ushlisha is the third wife before the fourth wife. Harishena Nishbas Ushnir. Now, the first wife to collect, she takes an oath to the second wife that she didn't get anything from her husband in her lifetime. She's not hiding anything away, but rather she's coming to collect now the ksuva from scratch. Ushnia, the second one, takes the same oath. Lashlishis, the third one. Ushlishis, Revis, and the third one takes the same oath to the Revis, and the fourth one. Varvis, Nifras, Shilobi, Shvua. But the fourth one doesn't take a shvua. To who is she going to take a shvua? Right? So who is she going to take an oath to? She's the last one. Right, so she doesn't take an oath.
So this is like an acharei technique.
Right, similar, but not quite the same thing. Afterwards, subsequent. But it's not, it's just because he already married them. Her vias nifrash lo b'shua. Arme benanas benanas is v'chim neshi achroin and he's scared. Just because she's the last one, she gets rewarded. Afilo tipra l'shua. Also, she can only collect if she takes a shua. Now, the reason that's so, the Mefarshim explain here, I'm assuming they'll explain based on the Bavli, but I didn't look at the Bavli inside. The reason that's so is because eventually what might happen is that somebody might come about chov. A creditor will come and collect from one of the earlier women. And at that point, they want to make sure that the fourth woman who took justifiably, because otherwise they would look for free and clear property to make up what some creditor took away from them. So therefore, they demand of the fourth woman to take an oath to make sure that she's not hiding something, because in case later on somebody will collect from them and they want to make up their ksuva from somewhere else. Okay? That's the first three.
That's the first three.
It's round robin. It says Gemara, "Hayukulun yetsis b'yamechana." What if all the ksuvas were in the same day? Actually, I don't know if you're allowed to, because Eima Arvin Simcha b'Simcha. But you know, he met all the ksuvas written on the same day, right? Kol kodem schaver to whichever came early in the day. Afilu shachas even by an hour, zochta they came first.
They don't normally.
No, they don't normally write. But it says, Yerushalayim shows. Yerushalayim used to read hours into the documents. Hayakulam yetsim shachas, we all came out the same hour. Beitram elamana, there's only $100. Chokos is over shava, they divide up evenly. Now, Rabbanu Shem Rishmul said, Kedivre ben Anas, like ben Anas said, they were afraid, right? And maybe somebody, some creditor will come later on and collect from one of the first three, so they're going to make the fourth one take a shvu also to make sure she's not hiding anything. Zokoy ben Anas, l'shtar echon, we can draw an analogy also to one document, shiyotzu, which comes out, in other words, a bill alone, al tribi al harbe lukuchos, on many customers. So in that case, we also say, kulam l'chok, in that case we say, kulam chok mishava, they all divide up equally, they all pay equally. Now, what does that have to do with ben Nanos? Because he says, in our Mishnah, where the everything happens sequentially, so then ben Nanos said, well, you know, in this case, we take the fourth one, make the fourth one take a shvua. Because later on, when the creditor comes, the creditor will go to one of the creditor is going to go to one of the first. Well, might go to one of the first three, and that one will have to pay. So therefore, she wants to make sure that the fourth one did not take any property, was not coming to her, in case she wants to take a reimbursement. Actually, is what I want to say for herself. But let's say one document came out simultaneously on all of the women. Right? We're only really afraid that a document's going to come out which is going to serve the creditor to go against one of the women, and therefore she wants to make the fourth one take a shvuah in order to make sure there's no free and clear property being hidden. But if the shtar came out against all the women at once, so they all have to pay up, right? There's no choice. So too, if a shtar came out against a whole bunch of customers at once, they'll have to pay up simultaneously. In our Mishnah, it's because we're talking about where we're afraid about chov will come to one of them, that's why one has to take a shvuah. But in fact, the flip side of that is the Baal Chov came to all of them, so then nobody takes a shvuah, they just all pay up equally according to their portions. Okay? Amrei Kiva Kumrei Mona. This Rabbi Kiva is an Amora. I don't even know if it's a Rabbi Kiva. It might be Rav Avram, Rav Amram, Rav Ami. Who knows who it is? But in any event, Rabbi Akiva said in front of Rabbi Mona, Lesed up, please, Rabbi Shmuel. Doesn't our Mishnah argue Rabbi Shmuel? The Shmuel Mar Shukta the Dainei. He said, we leave it up to the Dayan's discretion. Do you want to stay sure? So he says, when you have two documents on the same field, right? You don't know which is which. Give it to whoever you want. The Kol Marachim, but here it says not that way. Here it says that they divide it up evenly, right? That we don't try and figure out who should go to, or assign it arbitrarily. We divide it up evenly. So it's a question. It doesn't seem like we apply Shuda the Dino here, right? So it says more armily. So he said, Lo b'shnei shtoros, Shmuel says then where two documents are coming out on the same field, right? And then we can reckon who should get it more, right? But here, but in our case of Ksuvas, it's like one document on two fields where it's impossible to ascertain what exactly the person's intent was. It's two fields. Two people, I'm sorry, who have documents against one field. So we can figure out, he probably liked Joe better than Bob. But one person in two fields, we have no way of ascertaining, so therefore we really can't do shoot at the diner. Now, in fact, we said yes, so we do it. The Gemara's going to ask that. But more especially, we can't do shoot at the diner where it's two people on one field. I mean, where it's one person on two fields to figure out which field he wanted to give. How are we supposed to know that? So in any event, so says the Gemara, here too, by Ksuva, when they're all written the same day, we don't know which woman he loved more. So how are we supposed to know that? How are we supposed to intend to give Ksuva to?
Isn't that part of the Teres Shtar?
What?
Isn't this the
Teres? Yeah, that's why we don't say Shuda the Dina here. Because it's like Shtar Echad. Right, it's like Shtar Echad, we can't say Shuda the Dina. Says of a kav shtar shtar echon akhim. We're talking about one document, so you can't do shuda dina. Says hey, knock knock. V'lo shmir the mar Rabbi Avun b'shem Shmuel. Didn't you hear that when Shmar Avun said Rabbi Avun, the Rabbi Avun said name Shmuel? Lo shari ben shtar echon shiyotza al shtei sodas ben shtei shoras shiyotza sarachas. It doesn't matter. Eizem men shiyotzu beisin malach lid machlitin. Whichever one they want to give, they can give. But we do say shuda the dina. So the Gemara leaves it difficult. Seems like our Mishnah argues in Shmuel. Because Shmuel says, we even where it's E.F. Charlotte make him below the meal, so we can't tell, we do shoot the dyna. Either like Rashi, we try and figure out, or like this, we just give it arbitrarily. You know, our Mishnah doesn't say that. Our Mishnah says Chokin. So our Mishnah says, so even though where a case is impossible to figure out, it says you divide it up. You don't just give it to whoever you want. So it seems like our Mishnah argues in Shmuel. Okay? Says more further. Rebbe brought about this custom of dividing up equally Barnona uvagugoles uvamperos. If a creditor comes from the real estate collector or the poll tax collector, from the real estate that's our nona tax, who goes to poll tax, or amperos, or any levy, just or unjust, raised by the goyim. that we divide that that we divide it up equally according to whoever it's they deliver the summons to, whoever they come to collect, so they all deliver equally. Period. Ke'adah. Now we're going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that whoever got married first gets before her friend, right? The Nuxuba. Kadas, this goes like the Kadad Benanas. That's like Benana said that. I went back a line. I'm sorry. Or rather, I went back three words. What I should have read is Hini Rebbe Barnuna Vigilos Hapros Kadad Benanas. They divide up equally. Now, Kadah goes back in our mission and says that. Whoever came first has first dibs. Because we have a very funny, very strange story here. The Kriven Rabbi Yossi, the relatives of Rabbi Yossi, Zavne Chaklavan, they bought a field, mean Elin de Bartapkon, from people whose name was Bartapka. Aslin, Elin de Bartapkon, and these Tapkanites were very deceitful people. They went Nosin and Noshim, and they married women. V'alun Shkien, and they brought them in stars, which said that field, which really they just sold to Rabbi Yossi, or the relatives of Rabbi Yossi, belongs to you and is part of the dowry. So, Asun boy Mizgaraya, they wanted to come and pick a fight, bequeathed to Rabbi Yossi, with relatives of Rabbi Yossi, had acquired fair and square. Amurai Monas, Ramona said, Ana Yada, I know that Kadzavantun. Elaine Chakorosa, when the relatives of Rabbi Yossi bought the field, love Elaine Shkiyai Kadmechon, you didn't have these documents with which you gave them to your wives as part of their dowry in front of you. So it means that we always look carefully into when things took place. Because here, obviously, deceit was going to occur. They're going to pretend that they had actually made this land part and parcel of the wife's tshuva before having sold it to the relatives of Rabbi Yossi. So we have to be quick on the draw in order to prevent major fraud going on here. Okay? Mishia Nasi Shtei Noshim. So he was married to two women. Umbacha Sadeh, he sold his field. The Kosva Harishoina Lokeach, and the first of his wives wrote to the buyer of the field, Dino Dvarim En Limach, I renounce all claims against you. Well, what happens? The second wife didn't renounce any claims. Hashniya Motzi Ad Miad Lokeach. The second wife takes it away from the customer's hands. Varishoina Minash Varishoina, but then the first wife takes it from the second wife's hands. You know why? Because she renounced any potential judgment or claim against the buyer, but not against her co-wife. Right? Her co-wife, she hates her guts. So therefore, once her co-wife collects, she says, that's nice, Tiri, but my shibud was first. Give it to me. You see that?
And she's allowed to do it.
It's not fair, but that's life. Okay, that's what he says. Hachi asup sharbenim. Unless they make a compromise of some sort. It goes on and on. V'chem ba'achov, that's true also about a debtor. V'chem isha ba'aschov. And so too, a woman is a creditor. Same idea, you know, when they exempt one partner, not another partner. On Rabbi Yisrael said, Hadamara, this teaches our Mishnah, Hahein diyaz if somebody who borrows, mean trem day nash from two different people, asatinyana, and the second one came and said, Omar, lay, the second one comes. It says, the second debtor comes. He said, he says in front of the creditor, Kumi Pushrin, get up and make a compromise with me. That works. Because we see here that such a thing works, right? The one, you can divide and conquer. Amarle, so he says, I don't understand. Le Sofei, isn't it going to happen to him? What happened to our Mishnah? The Kadmaya Mashma, the first brother will hear, right? Not the brother. Yeah, just thinking about this. Sorry, that the first partner will hear that the second partner collected property, or the other way around. The Baal Chov will collect from the second from the second person, and the second person will collect from the first person. That's right. Baal Chov will collect from the second person. The first person, the Baal Chov was owed money by two separate people, right? So now, it's the other way around. Sorry, scratched that. Two creditors, one debtor. Let me see. Let me read again. I'm Rabbi Yossi Adomas, teacher us. I ain't the other shebnei albnei. No. A person borrowed money to two creditors. Asatinah, the second one comes. Armelin, he says, "Kumi poshri, you know, let's go make a let's make a compromise." Armelin, so he says, that works. The compromise can be made. Now the question comes to our Mishnah. Armelin, so he said, "Vleiso fei de kadmaya mashma." Isn't what's going to happen at the end? The first creditor who has first dibs, because he was chronologically first, will hear, who may say mitrov, and he's going to come and grab the land which is left to the borrower from the second creditor. I'm not sure I'm explaining this, but it's really a tragic case. It's make you cry. What happened is like, I don't mean that literally. That you have a creditor owes, a debtor owes, $10,000. Let's talk $100,000. Debtor owes $100,000 to two separate people. Now, to the second creditor, he makes the second creditor says, you know what, have rachmanis upon you, let's make a deal. I'll take 50. So the guy agrees. He settled the pshara, right? The question is, what good that does it? Where's the money going to go anyway? To the first creditor. First creditor is going to come and take the money. So what good did it do to make a pshara? Is that clear? He's going to lose anyway. So that's what it says. I'm going to lay Sophie the Kadmaya Mashma. The first creditor is going to hear Mason Mitchell is going to come and grab him. So it says, Umara, Yochum May Marle. You could say, Pushrin, make a pshara. I made a pshara. You can say, I made a pshara. V'ein Toraf Toraf. Okay, I forget how to read this line. No, yeah, okay, now, yeah. So the one answer is, the second creditor says, you're right. You're taking a risk if you make a compromise with me. But if you don't make a compromise with me, I'm just going to take your 100 grand. But he owes 100 grand to each one, right? So the second one says to the first one, well, the second one says, so he says, second one says, I'm willing to compromise on 50. So the debtor says, what good does it do me? Then some other creditor will come and take 50. So he said, maybe, but maybe we'll have to make him sure with him also. In the meantime, if you don't accept my pshara, I'm going to take it all away from you. This way you'll be left with 50 or whatever it is to deal with. Maybe you'll be able to handle with it. But you don't make a pshara with me, you'll can't be left with nothing anyway. Is that clear?
Why would he? Because he had first dibs? I mean, why does he...
No, he just because he came first. It's not material for our kids for first dibs. So name answers. So the Gemara said that that's really a question answer. So he says, "Amalei late sovit." What good is doing late sovit? The kamay mishma. Eventually, first of all, you're going to hear. Umeisim mishma is going to come and grab, right? And he's going to be out anyway. So the second Gemara says, "Yochum meimale." The second creditor could say, "Push her in, make him sure with me. Mean tarf tarf, and run your risk with the second the other guy. But it's your best interest to try and make him sure with both of us." Says Gemara, "Pisha min hasheni." It's true. Pisha Meshay, if he made a pshara, now here the chronology matters. If he made a pshara with the second guy, Chazaka Sharishim Bavatarif. It's Chazaka, the first guy's gonna come after him, won't do him any good. You're right. However, Pisha Minarishim. Let's say he made a compromise with the first guy. He made a compromise with the first guy. The debtor made a compromise with the first creditor. Okay? Now, Avraham Pinchas, Asa Uvda Kumi Rabbi Yirmiyah. Case came from Yirmiyah. Omri said, Pisher. So the legitimate pshar. It's a fascinating concept. What he's saying is that the second creditor comes and says, okay, now give me the $50,000. So the debtor says, nah. those $50,000 were coming to the first creditor, and he gave it to me as part of our pshara agreement. But it's as if he already collected it from me, and you have no right to it. It's an amazing concept. You hear that? Once the debtor makes a deal with the first creditor, so whatever the first creditor relinquishes him out of the goodness of his heart is now beyond the reach of the second creditor. Because it's like a side gift from the first creditor to the debtor. Yes, no, maybe.
Why? I don't understand the logic.
Do you get it?
My whole problem is...
You understand the logic? Wait, you understand the logic?
I understand the logic. What I don't understand is the relationship of the two debtors, the two creditors to each other. They're not partners.
Zilch. But the first creditor is owed $100,000. And his whole estate, there's insufficient funds to cover both loans, right. His whole estate is $100,000. It might be more, anything up to 200, obviously. But anything less than 200, right? So if he makes a settlement with the first guy, so whatever was left out of the settlement is really a gift to him from the first creditor.
Okay.
It's as if the first creditor already collected it, and therefore the second creditor has no rights on it.
That's no big deal. It's almost like
Colorado. Our lawyer. Yeah. Colorado La Vila.
Yeah.
Because it's as if he collected it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But now you meant, so the Mara doesn't like it. So that's the Mara, wait a minute. All right, I'm Rabbi Yossi Velokas Adikni. Standard operating procedures in any shtar, you write, that property I acquire in the future is under lien to this loan. So, okay, so he got a present from the first creditor, but so that in any property that a person buys, it's under lien to the loan. So therefore, why is this also not under lien to the loan? Yes, it's true, he got it. It's like a property which he bought after a dime, which also comes under lien to the loan. So here, too, the property came under lien to the loan. So says the Gemara, Lo'asi el b'yerish. You're right. The only time it's going to work is if he inherits property. Because if I inherit property, then I can say to other creditors, it's interesting, halacha, if I buy property, anytime after taking out a loan, that money becomes under lien to my creditor, because that's the way the shtar is written. Nechosim da'asin ana lemikne. We still write that into our ksuvas in our day and age. Any property that I'm eventually going to buy becomes meshubad, right? So if that's the case, if I write it into by any money which I get as a result of a pshara with the creditor, from first creditor, the second creditor is going to get, because it's as if I acquired it through purchase. However, if I inherited the property, then it doesn't fall under that clause in my shtar. It says, that I'm going to buy, not property I'm going to get. So therefore, if he inherits the property, then it doesn't fall before the second creditor. Or for that matter, before the first creditor. Property which a person inherits is out of the picture. Okay? Property, of course, which he owned, had inherited, but owned at the time of the loan, that becomes under shibud. But property he inherits later on does not come under shibud. Okay? Says the Gemara, Amrei Chayin said, Afilu Baal Chov Asya. It can even work by a Baal Chov, even by a creditor. By either lo kozalei kol dikne. If it didn't write, everything you're going to buy goes under lien. So then, whatever he gets as a result of the first pshara, he gets to keep. Osho Amar lo, he said, Ayel chapiron el mizeh. He said to him, the second creditor was an idiot, but he said to the second creditor, you only have right dibs to the same land that the first creditor has dibs to. So in that case, once he gets it back from the first creditor, it's considered like panim chadashos. He gave him dibs on the same field he gave dibs to the first creditor, but that's as long as he owns it. If the first creditor, as if he collected it in the settlement and then gave it back to him, so it's the same thing as buying a new field, and therefore the lien to the second creditor fell off.
Does the second Baal Chov have to know that the first Baal Chov was collecting only from that land?
Mm-mm. You mean if he doesn't know, he's going to be defrauded. But that's tough on him. He'll be defrauded. Okay? It's a loser. Right, because he didn't check it out. He should have checked it out. Should have made sure his was the only claim on this land. Should have run a title search. But he didn't, so tough. That's, I think, the way it works. Now, it says in our very interesting sushi, classic Yerushalmi, Rabbi Matania said, "Ask your commander Malik Suva Avalola tonight." This whole discussion is going according to opinion, which holds for Ksuva and not for Tanai. And what does it mean? It says, we have a machlokas. I had a machlokas a few blot ago. If somebody marries a woman and then divorces her and marries again. So the second time around, she gets the same Ksuva she got the first time around. What about the Tanai? The Tanai Ksuva. Are they obliterated by the divorce, or do they come back as well at the time of the second marriage? So it's a machlokas. So according to the opinion which holds that when the second marriage comes around, you get the ksuva, but not the tanai. So that's the case if you gave the land to the creditor and took it back. So it's not the same land, it's part of chadashos. But if the second time you get married, you go back to the same woman, you go back to the ksuva and the tanai ksuva, that means that the second marriage is just a reawakening of the first one. So to hear when he gets the land back after the pshara, it's not ponim chadoshos, it's the same old land. And therefore the second creditor has the right to come after that. Okay? So it's very interesting. If you hold a second marriage is a new marriage, and that's manifesting that you only get the ksuva but not the tanai ksuva, so here, if the land was taken, so to speak, by the first creditor, and then restored, so the second creditor's lien on it fell off because it's like a new parcel of land. But if you owe that from the first marriage to the second marriage, both the ksuva and the tanai ksuva continue, which means it's as if the first marriage never fell away. So too, here, if he gets the land back after the pshara, the original shibud remains intact on it, and the second creditor can come and collect it, even though, in the meantime, something happened to it, but since it's back in place, it's not putting chadoshos, and he can collect from it. Okay? So that brown commander, my ben exu, ben exnoim, ha chazira, it returns to its reverts original status, and the second creditor can come and collect it. Okay? That's a brilliant Yerushalmi tushna. Hamorin Yisrael, it's Thursday, not good, I think it's not good for Thursday nights. Hamorin Yisrael, it's a nichsei yisoymen. New pair. Amona is sustained from the property of the orphans. As a result, however, it's not from the estate. It's the property of the orphans. Well, it is from the estate, sorry. From the estate which the orphans have inherited, right? As a result, her handiwork is theirs. But they don't have to bury her if she dies. West barrier, Yarsheha, her heirs, Hayarshik Suvasu, inherit her Ksuva, Chayamik Murasa, they have to bury her. Now, the ones who get her Nichse Milog, Nichse Tzom Barzo when she dies, which are her father's house, they're the ones who have to bury her. Okay? Ravira B'Shem Shmuel, B'Avo B'Shem Yochan said, Mitzios, if she finds something, Shalosh, she gets to keep it. A wife who finds something goes to her husband, but she who finds something goes to her. Why? The Gemara is going to explain. Osir Mizonos. Gemara is going to link it. I don't know if the Gemara is going to explain. Osir Mizonos. What if she? If there's foodstuffs left over, right? She didn't eat up all the food she got. So shalom. That goes back to the assignment. Amona Shemitzin. Now the Gemara explains. Amona Shemitzios is shalom. Amona who gets to keep her own mitzvah. If we were to say that the Metziah goes to her, then if she leaves over food she didn't eat, then Aishas Ish Shemitziyasa Shalom and Aishas Ish, I skipped the line. Let me start with the anymore, because I skipped the line and mixed myself up too. I want to find something that's hers. What if she left over food? She didn't eat all the food she was assigned. So, Eishasish and Metziyasish Shalom, and Eishasish, whose Metziya goes to her husband, it's awful, she leaves over food she doesn't eat, so it's like a Metziya. So, Shalom goes to him as well. Amara, she Metziyasish Shalom, Amara, her Metziya goes to her, right? Not to her, to her keepers. So therefore, Osir Mazonas, if she gets that's left over, Mazonas Shalom, it's hers as well. Osir Beloyos, now also if she has leftover rags, the kids have to give her clothing. What about the rags which are left over tattered at the end of her wearing the clothing? They're hers as well. It's a kind of a chomer, the Gemara says. Actually, Ma Imeshes Ishah Osir Mazonas. Shalom, and Eishasish, whom, if there's extra food, it's her husband's. Hosir blights, but if she has rags left over on clothing, Shalom, it's hers. Amana, Shosir Mizonos, and Amana, where she has excess food, it's hers. Shalom, Hosir blights, if she has excess clothing, Lo Shakoshke is not a kav chomer, it gets to stay by her, so it's Pashut, says Amana. Tam and Chicholon, does, I might say, and Eishasish gets to keep blights. You know what? Because what she's going to do with the rags? She's going to wear them when she's in Nida. But here, by where a woman is Amana, she doesn't do anything special in her Nida period. So why does she need the ployas? Says, well, what are you talking about? Yeah, but when she's in Nida, she doesn't wear her nice clothes. This is the days before, you know, they had protection for the clothing. So therefore, she doesn't want to wear nice clothes. So also in Amona, she needs the bloyos, and she also gets the bloyos for the days of her Nida. Okay? Rabbi Ami Mishem Rabbi Yisrach Nida. Rabbi Ami Rechid Yisrach Nida said, even though it says in our Mishnah that she killed her Maisi Yadayim, go to the Yisoyman, at he ain't also Dvarim Shal Yichud, also a son of Rashi, which is the Yisoyman, intimate things which she would do for her husband. My Dvarim Shal Yichud, what are intimate things? Sochel and Gufon, to anoint their body with oils, Umarchetzel and Esprem, wash their faces, Umozegs and Akos, and pour their wine. Because obviously that's not appropriate. Umozim Milam Zonosem, we add on to her food based on what she was accustomed to during her lifetime. The Yisoyim have to keep her up from the estate in the style to which she has become accustomed. However, as a result, normally, if a husband goes to Chutzlaretz, we don't provide his wife with wine. Because wine, women are not supposed to drink wine. But if in her lifetime her husband provided her with wine, right, Amana yesh lo yayin, and as Amana she does get wine. Eishasish, a married woman, Shama Yatsum is a maizya dem is on the side, says, I want to keep my own handiwork and you're off to feed me. Ain't shamilo, we don't listen to her. Now the Bavli argues in this. Moshe tries to reconcile Bavli and Shai. I don't think it's possible. The Bavli holds a woman can't say, "Any of these items, any Isa. I don't want to get fed by you, and I want to keep my handiwork." But the Yerushalmi holds not the way. The Yerushalmi is the opposite. Holds you can't do that. A woman cannot see any of these items, any Isa. She's on the lien to work for her husband, and that's where she gets mizonos. Okay, unless he renounces it. So the Yerushalmi says she can't renounce it. But Amana Shama Yotzi Yedei Maaseh Yedei Mizonos. But Amana who renounces it says, I want to keep my handiwork and provide myself with food. Shemila, we listen to her because she's under no lien to provide anything for the Yisoyman. Then a lien to her, as opposed to a woman who we don't listen to her because, Quentin Jami, because she's under a lien to work for her husband. Okay? Now, period. New issue. Rav Amar, Rav said, Hames Amar, if a maid said, I'll take Bruni, I don't want you to bury me. From my funds, of course. Nikwar Bitstaka, he's buried based on Staka. Now, the Mechamayim, I think, has a very valid point here. He says, what kind of business is this? Isn't it obvious? How can a person say, I don't want to be buried from my own money? And the girl, he's going to, Staka will have to bury him. It's nutty. How can you possibly in such a way that Staka has to bury him? So he says the Pshat is like this, very interesting. So it's not that the guy says explicitly, I don't want to pay for my burial. He gave all of his property as a matna shchimira to somebody else. So he doesn't have any money left to pay for his own burial. Okay? So in that case, it says, if he says, I don't want you to bury me. In that case, we give it to, we make Tzedakah bury him. Why? Because he no longer, it's no longer his money. If it's his money, we'd say, you're a jerk. You want to get out paying for your own funeral, you'll pay for your own funeral. But if you gave it as a matna shchimir to somebody else, so we can't go to the other person and demand, you pay for Reuven, your benefactor's funeral. That would be nice, but it's not halachic, right?
What about if he just says it as a shchimir, I don't want to use my money to pay.
So the Mechel Mayim says, in that case, it's partial that we wouldn't listen to him. That can't be the case. Now, says Mara, Rabbi Yami, or Mara, Mara said, the Chitala, Daitcha, Shuacherim, and Barnasim, or Mishalo. Do you really think that other people that are getting his money, meaning the person to whom he gave the Matana, Funik by Mitztaka, where Kaka, the very Mitztaka? Where's the argument that says, what kind of business is that? It's his own fault, right? And other people are enjoying the property. We're not going to take up for it. We're from it, of course we'll take up. It says, Mar must be simply a rav. It seems our mission argues a rav. Because our mission says, Yorshim are Yorshim Ksuvasa, the heirs who get a Ksuva, Chayavim Bikvurasa. So we see that the whoever gets the money has to bury her. We don't make the Chevra Kadisha bury her. So to Rav's case, since he gave his money, again going according to the Mechel Mayim, since he gave his money as a manna shchimira to somebody, that guy should have to bury him. Not like Rav says, right?
Rav says was exactly
public
area.
You think they went to Yerushalmi? It's not in the Bavli. It's not in the Bavli. That's amazing that they became in Yerushalmi. Okay. Gives one pause. Okay. Says tomorrow. Pasal Rav. It doesn't say Pasal Rav, but it says Pasal Rav. It's a Bishiyoshu Karka. Interesting thing, if they inherit land, then before they take hold of the land, the Chiv Kvura devolves on the land. I want to learn it's a mystical thing, that Kvura is in the land. So therefore, before they took hold of the land, it's as if there's a kever there. But the Mechel Mayim is more pedestrian about this. He says that by land, it's not shach tfisa. You don't really take hold of land. So therefore, the land is never fully taken away from the estate in the sense that would deprive us of the capacity to bury the person there.
Why went tonight?
Neil Kirshner.
Neil Kirshner is a husband?
Yeah,
to who?
Tom Maris.
Oh, very nice. Yes.
Okay. I guess the only Tom Merrill was in town.
That's what he said. Neil.
You didn't know about this ahead of time?
No. Oh boy, so you're slipping. Okay. Sheldon Kirshner's son. Jerry Manuman's brother-in-law. Very nice.
So anyway, let's go a couple of lines further. So says Gemara, Masisa Pliga Rav. The Mishnah argues on Rav. It says Yoshea Yoshim Ksuvasa Chami Kvurasa. It says her heirs who inherit her Ksuva are Chayev in her Kvura. Oh, I just did that. Sorry. So part of Yoshu Karka. So he, as I said, the Karka is different. Kadodatani. Like that, which you learned, when a person leaves over, whoever gets them first merit gets them, and that precludes, you can't sell, if a person gives matna shchimira to somebody, see, and he took hold of them already, so you can't demand of him, well, release the state, release that money to bury your benefactor. He says, it's mine! All mine! I got it already! You can't demand of me to release it in order to bury my benefactor. Tough on my benefactor. Let the vultures eat him. Right? So, Koka Valonik by Britztoka. And that guy's buried Britztoka. We may should call him a Tofas. Because these are Metalkin, which can be grabbed. Right? Avodim Shvacho starts Metalkin, right? However, Avohim lo karam v'tafas, motzi miyado. and if you didn't take what they didn't were able to grab, Motzim Yod would be taken away for burial purposes of the benefactor, and that is specifically karka, right? Now, this is Patale, Boimer Kvaruni. Now, says more, maybe not. Maybe that's specifically talking about a case. Yeah, I heard you're not learning tonight. You got engaged, this Neil. Or you got a tape from him. Okay. So Patale, Boimer Kivruni. So says more, not. Maybe it's talking about a case where he said, Kivruni, bury me. Okay, and that's why there's a preclusion. If the mace is buried and he didn't say Kivruni, even though other people could to grab the property, we take it away to bury their benefactor. That's where they grab land. When do we take away from them? When they grab land. But they grab metaltlin, motzin miyodom. So it's too late. The benefactor has been eaten by the vultures. So the only time where they grab the stuff already, the people who got the maton or shchimira, so we can't take it away from them. Where they didn't grab it yet, so then we can take it away from them, and then we can, or where it's karka, we can take it away from them and bury the guy. We'll continue with this on next Wednesday.